What's up, everybody? It's Ben.
And Sarah.
And welcome to episode 2 of What's in the Boxed?
There's a movie in there.
There's a movie in there for sure. So this is, if you guys missed the first episode, this is the brainchild of Sarah. She needed something creative to do with your boy, and so she put this together. And I'm going to let Sarah tell everyone what the show is about.
Yeah, so the idea is that we are exploring the Venn diagram of our respective Letterboxd accounts.
Ooh.
And I'm going to say it again. If you look at the Letterboxd logo, it kind of looks like a Venn diagram.
True indeed.
So I'm not reaching here. And also, Ben is a much more prolific viewer than I am.
Don't make me sound like a big fat nerd.
I didn't say it.
I do be watching movies, though. Back to back.
Yeah. Ben watches a lot more. He knows a lot more. He has a lot more industry and technical and theoretical knowledge than I do. I am a casual viewer, but I do think that I have a good sense. I have a good sense. I have a sense for movies. I have concepts.
It could have been anything. It could have been paintings or books or anything, but I just like movies, man. I don't know. They move. You can make them. They can make you laugh. But they can make you cry.
We did both make movies as children. And I will tell you this until your dying day, that I've been editing longer than you.
That's for another episode. It's just like, I don't know what it is about America, but it's like our number one cultural export is movies and music.
Hell yeah.
So it just seems like if you're going to be an American, then
watch movies.
What's your favorite movie, dog? You know?
Exactly. So what's your favorite movie?
Right now, it's John Woo's The Killer.
Okay. But wait, oh wait, but this is based on Letterboxd. So what's your top four right now?
Well, I decided to take it back to when I first was coming of age and really getting into movies. Mm-hmm. And this is around the turn of the millennium. So I put Clerks 94,
okay.
Matrix 99,
all right.
Kill Bill Volume 1, and what was the other one? Terminator, I think, 84. These are just...
Okay, so you're a basic bitch.
I threw them up there because I like looking at the posters on my profile. Call it basic if you will, but I mean, these are sacred texts of my life. You know, these are the movies unto which all things are judged. And like I said in the last episode, I'm unfairly critical to comedies. And so when it comes to Clerks, a movie made for basically nothing, I'm always just like, you know, does it bring the heat? You know, mm-hmm. Clerks is juvenile as all get out, but there's some heart in there. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure.
And so the heart kind of, you know, it's like, whoa.
I can respect that in the top four.
Yeah. So.
For balance, my top four is, as we discussed last time, Buffy the Vampire Slayer,
mm-hmm.
Clue.
Oh, hell yeah.
The Thing.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. And Natural Born Killers.
Okay, yeah.
And I don't want to get too off course, but the first time I encountered Natural Born Killers was when I was about 10 or 11 years old in a Blockbuster video.
Okay.
And I saw the cover art and it intrigued me.
You're talking about the US cover art with Woody Harrelson's face and in his glasses is Juliette Lewis?
No. It had both of them. I think maybe in a car, in the convertible.
Okay. Because there's a few different...
I could be wrong, because that was like 30 years ago, but...
Just the poster intrigued you?
No, not the poster. The VHS cover.
Oh, okay.
The sleeve.
Yeah.
And I saw it, and I'm like, I want to see that movie. And I don't even think I told anyone that I wanted to see that movie.
Okay.
I just coveted that movie until...
You filed it away.
Yeah.
Mentally.
And then I watched it, finally, like 20 years later, and now it's one of my favorites.
Hell yeah. It is awesome. It is awesome.
So I guess judge a book by its cover is the moral of the story.
Is that a good lesson?
All right. Again, I spent a summer at Dartmouth and that's exactly what I did. I went to a local bookstore and I literally bought books based on the cover art entire summer, and they were all amazing. The Minotaur takes a cigarette break.
But yeah, that's a good thing to
do. It works. It does work sometimes.
Well, I mean, the whole point
Not when it comes to people, but when it comes to literal art. Yes.
I mean, bringing it back to movies, the movie poster is supposedly what's supposed to get you in.
Exactly.
To buy a ticket. You're supposed to see the one sheet and go, damn, okay, it's got a dude holding a gun on the cover. I'm signing up.
Oh, yeah, you are.
If there's a guy, look, everybody out there, if there's a dude holding a gun on the fucking poster, I'm watching it. I don't give a fuck.
What if the gun is tucked into his pants?
It doesn't matter. It's telegraphing to me that some shit is either going to get blown up or some people are going to get shot up. And
again,
I like that.
Again, if there's an explosion, is that bonus points?
Hell yeah. If you put an explosion on the cover, that's an instant click.
Okay.
Clickety click click. I'm action movie coded.
Would you like to play a game?
Hell yeah. What you got in mind?
I think you might regret this.
Okay.
It's a little different from last time.
Last episode, okay.
So last time we were talking about movies that we watched together and we had both rated and reviewed. This time we're going to talk about movies that you yourself in your deepest, darkest moments of solitude have watched and rated and reviewed. And I don't know if you
remember. Are you stalking my Letterboxd profile?
Yes, I am. It's exactly what I've done.
Oh, shit.
I've gone back over it. To be clear, this is just the gems that I've uncovered from the last 4 weeks.
Okay.
Are you comfortable?
I've been watching a lot of
I know.
Schlock trash.
Yeah.
This past month, so
this, you ready?
This is gonna be good. Yeah, right.
I'm gonna take it easy on you in the first one because the first one's gonna be a new release that you've seen and I haven't. Can you guess?
A new release?
Very new.
I just watched Megalopolis. Is that what it is? Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. We did that twice. We did that last time, too.
Yeah. This is the elephant in the room.
All right. But before you go on, I will tell you, I will recite to you your review.
Okay.
To me, that's cinema. Been hearing about this movie literally my entire life, so it's nice to see what it has eventually become. Review proof.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't gonna be for everybody, but it's definitely for me. I didn't need it to make sense. I just needed it to exist.
Yes.
5 stars. And that is sounds like a very heartfelt, passionate review. Like this movie meant something to you.
Starlog magazine is an old school zine that is about cinema. And this is like '90s. Late 80s, early 90s, but this is like, you know, internet's not there. Magazines are on the stand. How do you find out about movies? Really, how do you find out about what the filmmakers are thinking? You either got to fire up a Laserdisc and listen to a commentary track, or you got to listen to a zine. Most of these zines are pulling up on filmmakers and they're getting an interview in, right? And it is no secret, at least when it comes to Megalopolis, the project, that this is something that Francis has been trying to put together since...
For decades.
I think
right after Apocalypse Now. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Or actually on the set of Apocalypse Now. Because that movie took forever to make. So, I mean, there's a lot of hot mics where he's talking about what he wants to do, right? It's just an interesting part of the conversation of cinema is that there's this phantom project. It has a name. It has an artist attached to it. And everybody wants to ask him about it. And he wants to say that he would like to make it one day, right? But the idea of apparently it's grown, it's evolved, I should say. Like, he's wanted it to be one thing, and then years later he wanted it to be another thing, and then years later he wanted it to be another thing. And I think the biggest pull quote is that he tried to get it made in the early 2000s. There was a huge financial push to get it shot around 2001. During the September 11th attacks, decided not to do it.
Of course.
Because they thought that a tyrant trying to reshape New York City into what his vision is. That was the last time that the machine was being put behind trying to get this out. There was actually a lot of press at the time like, hey, it's coming. We're going to make it. We're going to make it. And then when the terrorist attacks happened, it went flat.
Yeah.
And so right now, Eleanor has passed away, his wife. And he is getting old. And so I think he's just got the wherewithal and the financial backing to do it himself. And so, like, now the movie is out. They shot it here in Atlanta.
And he produced and financed the whole thing, right?
He sold off percentages of his back catalog.
His winery,
sold
right?
Some of his winery.
Vineyard.
Yeah. So basically he put up his own money, and this product is now out. And it was released at Cannes in May, and now it's out wide. And it's like a movie for nobody. it's like have you ever seen any of those Wachowski movies like Jupiter Ascending or Cloud Atlas? You know what these movies are, right?
No.
Okay. Well.
No. Oh no.
No. Megalopolis is like a Wachowski movie for boomers. That's the review that I like because it's
a Wachowski movie for boomers.
Post Matrix. Yeah.
Post Matrix.
This is or it's Southland Tales. That's the follow-up to Donnie Darko. He made this big movie and it would just nobody. So like this is it,
ooh. What about the sequel, the Donnie Darko sequel?
We don't have to go there. Okay. But like the whole thing about Megalopolis is that now that it's out, it seems like the studio machine, like the smear campaign for this movie, had started before the movie was even shot. The fact that somebody as big as Francis was going to put up his own money and make this movie, there's this dialogue that like, can movies be made like this now without the involvement of the studios? Obviously the studios would rather they go see a movie, one of the 18 plots that exist, let's remake this movie, sequelize an IP you recognize.
Yeah.
And so Francis is like threatening the studio system and kind of creating, and this is the dialogue around it. I know you're making that face, but
he's
like,
he's not like going to bring it down.
But this is what people are interpreting the smear campaign to be about, trying to damage the reputation of this movie before it comes out.
Okay.
Because, what if this movie is commercially successful and critically appraised? You know, people would have probably been like, oh wow, we could make our own movies, right? So I think he made a movie for himself, and I appreciate the project. You know, it is a mess for sure. I mean, but that is even going to not age well. Like in a few years, we might be able to look back and be like, yeah, it's a little incoherent, but maybe a director's cut is around the corner. Who knows? Mm. So I just think it's too soon to really just kind of shit all over the movie and walk away from it.
The way you're describing it, as far as being like an exercise for the filmmaker, is there a Citizen Kane-y kind of thing element too? Is that a
I don't know. Comparison? It's tough because Citizen Kane has a through line.
And this doesn't?
This movie has a message.
So that leads me to my second question, because so you saw, we talked about this last time, you saw The Substance before me.
Mm-hmm.
And said that you thought I would hate it.
And well, that's only because you said you don't like body horror films.
That was the only reason?
Once I was like, this is a crazy theatrical experience, I was like, we got to go. I got to bring you because...
I mean, I don't like body horror, but I like Swamp Thing. And that's basically what like the Monstro was.
But what are you saying?
I was going to ask if you think that I would like...
Megalopolis?
Yeah.
You got to watch it with an open mind. And this goes for anybody.
Okay.
Not that my opinion matters. I'm just one person. But you have to look at something like that as, you know, you got to respect what he did. These interviews with Adam Driver are so interesting because, you know, Adam Driver didn't drop Disney by name. But he said, as you know, he did the Star Wars movies, right?
Yeah, of course.
And he is so used to the director having to answer to the producers, who have to answer to the shareholders, who have to answer to all this other shit.
So it's like a little bit unleashed.
Well, so yeah, it's like who's directing Star Wars? These people in the shadows are directing the movie, right?
Right.
They're bringing in J.J. Abrams to be the puppet to put it all together and talk to the actors. But it's really these shadowy puppets putting together Star Wars. Meanwhile, it's Francis. You know, it's literally these on-set interviews and photos of Francis and Adam Driver hanging out on set.
Yeah.
And he's basically like, yeah, it's nobody. It's like we were experimenting on set and we do so much and then we have to stop because we have to go to sleep. But then we wake up the next day and then we just keep doing it. And we don't have to answer to anybody else. It's literally Francis's movie. So this movie came like everything you see. All the ridiculous nonsense that probably doesn't even make sense upon another viewing was him. Like, that's what he wanted. He chose that. And I feel like we're too close to it. You know, like you go to see a movie and you expect certain things. Most audiences do. They want, you know, a happy ending, guy gets the girl, right off into the sunset. You know, there's like all this kind of crap. And then you see a movie that challenges what your idea of what a movie can be. And then you lash out at it. And that's what's happening. Everyone's lashing out at the movie.
Sure.
I was in a theater with one other person, and even that person walked out.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what the fuck, dude? Like, give it a chance. Like, just see what happens.
And didn't you say, hold on, we're going to move on in just a second, but you said that Francis walked into the bar adjacent to the plaza after...
While they were shooting the movie here in Atlanta.
After it wrapped?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just to be like, you know, a chap.
I'm done now.
Yeah. And everybody ran up on him and was taking pictures. There was all over Reddit and stuff. Yeah. But I mean, he was just like literally out on the fucking sidewalk on Ponce de Leon by himself. You know, he's not afraid. You know what I mean? Yeah. He is literally not afraid. But yeah, the movie ends and it's dedicated to his wife.
Aww.
The last thing you see before the credits is for my wife, Eleanor. And it just seems like in his old age, they probably had multiple pillow talk nights where she was probably like, if you don't make this fucking movie.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'll do it.
Like I've done to you.
I'm just saying, like, it's just kind of funny that this is what has come to pass. This is something he wanted to do.
Yeah.
And Gen Z is shitting all over it. And it's
that's a whole other avenue.
I can be Gen Z when I want to, but also, you know, to me, like my review said, that's cinema.
Appreciate the commentary on Megalopolis.
Yeah, I didn't mean to get off on a tangent there. Sorry.
No, you love it. The next one, though, might be unexpected. So this is not a competitive game. It's not a point system, but I'm going to do it anyway. So I'm going to give you a point.
Yay!
Yay! For Megalopolis. I'm not sure that you're going to get a point for this one because I have no fucking idea what's about to happen. But the next movie is Hundreds of Beavers.
Yeah. Okay.
And here's your review. Midnight movie, wild. Nothing will compare to seeing this for the first time. 4 fucking stars. What the fuck is this? This movie is from like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What is this movie?
So I don't really know much about the production history of this movie, but I can say that it was
Hundreds of Beavers.
It's a film festival darling. That's all I knew. Oh. I knew that. The people who were coming out of seeing it at film festivals were singing its praises. People who I respect in the film criticism sphere were coming out saying that this is a one-of-a-kind movie. And you know how I said in the last episode, everything seems like it's been done before, so everything is remixes. Sure. So when somebody comes out and says, this is a new creation, immediately my ears perk up, like, what the fuck could they have done, right? So it's kind of funny that I like that. I like that this is coming off the end of the Megalopolis discussion because this is a movie that doesn't really look like anything else. My favorite review, somebody nailed it, is imagine if Buster Keaton had an Adobe Creative Cloud account.
That doesn't help. That doesn't give me any more context.
But like, so when I saw that, I was like, okay, this is probably going to be insane. So do you know, it's like...
Can you draw any comparison? Or at least give me a synopsis. Like, are there literally beavers?
Yeah, yeah. There's hundreds of beavers.
There are literally hundreds of beavers.
So it's about a settler in the Old West who has to fend for himself and survive in the winter, okay? And all of it is...
What, are they like CGI beavers?
No, it's people in beaver costumes.
What?
So imagine if you shot
like life sized.
So there we like to shoot.
Hold on. Yeah, I'm sorry. Like people sized beavers.
If you are fans of VFX, if you are fans of silent era movies where you're showing and not telling, and if you're a fan of stunts, so stunts, VFX, and old timey silent movies in a blender, right?
And beavers.
Yeah. So it's just the creativity is off the charts. There's a Minecraft madness sequence for Donkey Kong fans. It is just like, I would encourage you guys to not watch the trailer. Minecart Carnage. Don't watch the trailer. Maybe take a peek at the trailer. Like watch the first 13 seconds of the trailer and then pause it because I guarantee you, you'll be like, oh, I'm in. You know Damn. What I mean? Just the way that this movie looks. It's visual style, the execution, it's camp as hell. It has a good, it's just a good time. And the reason why I said it's midnight movie is because, like, you know, if you're baked and it's the end of the night and you got your homies over and you throw this on, it is going to send it's just going to be a riot. People are going to be like, where did this movie come from? You know, how do I not know about it?
What the fuck's going on?
What the fuck is going on? Because the first act is just this dude trying to survive in the wilderness and they're putting it together entirely on a green screen. And it is just like the creativity is off the charts and it's Hundreds of Beavers, baby. That might be top 10 2024 easy.
Kind of. Upset that you didn't mention that to me before. We're gonna have to talk about that in therapy.
Yeah, it's geeked up.
Again, this is not a points game, but I'm gonna give you 3 points for that.
Hell yeah.
Because that sounds fucking awesome.
Hey, we love points over here.
Yeah.
4 points?
4 points. On a scale of who the fuck cares. All right. The next movie. I really hope you don't talk about this one for very long because it's Judge Dredd.
Oh my God, Judge fucking Dredd.
Hold on, your review. Damn, Rob Schneider did not need to be in this joint. 1.5 stars.
Truer words have never been spoken.
No, wait a minute, isn't that the name of a roller coaster at Six Flags?
Rob Schneider?
No!
Oh, Judge Dredd? The Rob Schneider roller coaster.
Yes.
That's just his life. This is a movie that I've always been interested in because it's like 90s cheese with a side of cheese covered in cheese kind of shit, you know, comic yeah. book. It's a deep comic book movie. Long story short, the movie Demolition Man with Stallone, Rob Schneider is in that movie.
What?
And he has a bit role, but apparently it's like a memorable bit role. He plays a cop at the police station, so when the cop shows up, he's like there shooting the shit, and he has a standout role. And the lore is Rob Schneider made Stallone laugh so hard on the set of Demolition Man that Stallone remembered him. And so when they were
put him in Judge Dredd.
When they were casting Judge Dredd, they were like, who are we going to get to play the foil, not the foil, but like the comedic relief character? And Stallone was like, oh, I got just the guy, Rob Schneider. And so Rob Schneider is actually in this movie a lot. You know what I mean? And it was Rob Schneider was given creative license to improvise and make fun of the Judge Dredd character. And so, like, you know, there's a scene where like Judge Dredd and Rob Schneider are getting arrested, and Rob Schneider is making fun of Judge Dredd, like, I am the law. You know, he's doing things like making fun of the Stallone character.
So
on top of it kind of being a misguided movie, it's ruined by having Rob Schneider in basically every scene as the comedic relief. And when the comedic relief is not funny, it's like it's just even worse. But like, you know, I've always wanted to see this movie. I have it on VHS. And then the other day I found it on Laser. And I was like, okay, this is it. I'm going to watch it, you know? So yeah. I picked it up, found time to watch it, sat down, and it took me like 2 or 3 sittings to get through. There were times when I pushed stop, went and did something else, came back, hit play, and was just like, Jesus Christ.
Through it.
Yeah, it was, you know.
Well, that's the thing. It's called comedic relief for a reason. Like, you don't need it all the time.
Yeah.
You need it at specific moments of tension.
Yeah, like, I know nobody gives a fuck, but in the third act, Rob Schneider is shot in the gut.
Good.
And I was like, oh yeah. Like, he's like down for the count, but then he like saves the day, and he's like wheeled off in the hospital at the end of the movie, you know, in a stretcher. And I was just like, you know, but yeah, when he was shot, I was like, yes.
All right, you get a point.
Oh, thank you, Sarah.
All right, next one. Runaway.
Oh, okay, yeah, Runaway. Sure.
And here's your review, read to you out loud. No. This movie is so fucking stupid. I love it. Imagine having to make a movie that, like, sort of capitalizes on the plot of Blade Runner, but with Gene Simmons as the villain. Michael Crichton, you crazy for this one.
He was. He was crazy for that one, for sure.
3.5 stars.
3.5
stars. What the fuck is this movie?
Blade Runner comes out, and the plot of Blade Runner is that a guy has to go chase down rogue robots, right?
Mm-hmm.
And retire them. So this movie is about the same thing, right? Tom Selleck is a cop, and his job is to kill robots.
Wait, but I have heard of this movie? Is this like scraping the...
This is like a financial failure back then and everything.
Good.
But I wanted to see more Michael Crichton movies that he had written and directed himself, right?
Okay. All right.
He's a cop, and he has to kill robots that go haywire. The robots that go haywire are called runaways, okay?
Oh, hence the name.
So the thing about Blade Runner is the villains are androids. They're humanoid androids, right? Mm-hmm. This movie, robots are like tractors, like farm tractors.
Wait.
Vacuum cleaners?
No.
So in this quote unquote future,
Tom Selleck is hunting down vacuum cleaners,
tractors. Yeah.
Lawnmowers?
Yeah, things like that.
Toasters.
Gene Simmons cracks open these robots and puts a special chip in these select robots that causes them to go crazy. Murderous. Yes. It's so funny because they call in Tom Selleck, and his job specifically is to retire these murderous robots. Tom Selleck has a long history of following in the footsteps of Harrison Ford's roles in movies.
Okay.
And so this is like coming on the heels of Blade Runner, and it's like not even futuristic at all. It's like future, but it's just like LA. And then Gene Simmons is like the villain who's like the shadowy villain who's like, yes, this is all according to plan. I had seen Looker, which is the film that Crichton did before this, and Looker is an interesting take on deepfakes back then. the concept that we can copy you, kill you, and use you for advertisements.
Yeah.
Misguided, but a good science fiction experiment. Okay. Runaway is a huge budget movie, and it is like slow as molasses, dumb as fuck. The special effects are so stupid.
Of course you did.
I like sci-fi a lot, and this is like, it's just so stupid.
It's so stupid. It's so fucking stupid. I love it. That's my review. You said. Last one, The Wraith. All right, here's your review. And this is why I picked it, because what? The Crow meets The Fast and the Furious.
Yeah.
4 stars.
Okay, so The Wraith, one of these obscure movies from the 80s that banked on the star power of then-up-and-coming Charlie Sheen to give it some success, right? In fact, Charlie Sheen was on his way to shoot the movie Platoon with Oliver Stone when he stopped in Tucson, Arizona to shoot this movie for like a day and a half, right? So he's the top billed actor, but he was only on set for a day and a half. So they shot his scenes for like 48 hours straight and then he dipped. So the movie comes out low budget as fuck. Oliver Stone went to go see it and then went to the set of Platoon and grabbed Charlie Sheen by the fucking throat.
Oh, yeah, he was mad.
And threw him up against the wall and was like, you can't do movies like this.
That's right.
He was afraid that the reception to The Wraith was going to ruin Platoon because Charlie Sheen is supposed to carry that movie, right? Yeah. He was just like, dude, you just made a complete stinker. How dare you? You know, like, when did you even make this fucking thing? Like, you can't just run away and shoot a bad movie and come back to the set. My friend came over. So, I mean, my relationship to the movie is we were talking VHS, and more specifically, we were talking film to tape transfers. Mm-hmm. Movies that are pan and scanned back in the film to tape transfer days, but looked great. And he was like saying that the one movie that he saw on VHS back in the day that looked perfect was The Wraith. He said that him and his wife watched it on their like 27 inch CRT and were just absolutely
enraptured.
They were like the quality of this VHS was through the roof, that they loved it.
Yeah.
But the plot is like they run this guy off the road and kill him, but he comes back for one last race. And none of it is explained. So that's my The Crow meets The Fast and the Furious review. Paul was like, you got to watch this movie. So Lionsgate put it out on Blu-ray a couple years ago, right?
I love Lionsgate.
I watched the Lionsgate Blu-ray recently and was like, okay, cool. Cheesy little 80s B movie, mm-hmm. right? And then I responded to a Facebook ad of some guy who had inherited a fucking storage unit full of shit. I was like, do you have any Laserdiscs in there? And he was like, yeah, I got it. And he had a bunch of crappy Laserdiscs, but then he had The Wraith. And I was like, I don't fucking believe it, because I looked online and The Wraith is going for hundreds of dollars on eBay.
And how much did you pay?
I think I gave him $10 for it or something. But the thing is, it had been thrown into a dumpster. And then he went back to the dumpster to get it out. So this was almost destroyed, melted down for plastic. You know what I mean? And I saved this movie from the trash. And of course, you know, when I bring things into the house that are in bad condition, I restore them. I refurbish them. I don't just bring in smelly crap.
Very clean.
So anyway, when it got here, it smelled like a dumpster. So I had to refurbish the jacket, clean the disc and everything like that. And now it doesn't smell like that. Get the bacteria off of it and everything.
Yes.
I have this incredibly rare edition of The Wraith that goes for hundreds of dollars online that fans. It's in the top 1,000 on the database of collectibles on Laser.
Oh, wow.
It's a highly sought after disc. I saved it from a dumpster.
Do you want to stand by? Oh, wait, you gave it 4 stars.
Because it has memorable moments.
Okay.
Like Clint Howard plays a flag girl.
Like when they do the chickie race and there's a girl that takes her scarf off?
Yeah.
Clint Howard?
Yeah. The thing about The Wraith is that at the time, Charlie Sheen was trying to come out from underneath his father as an actor. And also, Nick Cassavetes was trying to come out from his father as an actor.
Yeah.
So, like, there's a lot of... And then Randy Quaid is also in this movie, and he's trying to come out from the shadow of his successful older brother. There's a lot of, like, you know... And then Clint Howard, who all... Everybody has famous siblings, and so this is, like, everybody was coming together.
Like a super group of the underdogs.
Everybody had consciously been like, we're going to go as hard as we can and show our all. And everybody's given their all to this B-movie.
And it didn't work.
Well, I mean, it just disappeared. It actually was bigger in Asia than it was in the United States. But I mean, it's like, if you just want to watch something on a Saturday, I recommend it. Good shit. Sarah, thank you so much for having me on the show.
Ah,
It was really fun.
Thank you so much for being here.
We played a game, and it was a game. Hopefully, I didn't bore anybody talking about the Wraith or Megalopolis or whatever.
Did you enjoy? You know, what do you think about me digging through your?
I think it makes for a good show. I almost forgot that I had seen Hundreds of Beavers.
There we go. That's what we're looking for.
You know, I forgot that because I watched that again at midnight, and by 2 I was blown away and also asleep. So I was just like, you know.
And this gave you a chance to revisit and perhaps turn other people on to a good midnight movie.
Heck yeah.
And that's what it's all about.
Well, all right, guys, we're going to get up out of here. I had a lot of fun on this episode. This has been What's in the Box. I'm your host, Ben.
And Sarah.
And we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.